Chapter 113. He had by this time approached, and now ventured to sit down by him. How am I? Answered Hugh. Where were you yesterday? Where did you go when you left me in the jail? Why did you leave me? And what did you mean by rolling your eyes and shaking your fist at me, eh? I shake my fist at you, brother. Said Dennis, gently checking Hugh's uplifted hand, which looked threatening. Your stick, then, it's all one. Lord love you, brother, I meant nothing. You don't understand me by half. I shouldn't wonder now, he added, in the tone of a desponding and an injured man, but you thought, because I wanted them chaps left in the prison, that I was a-going to desert the banners? Hugh told him, with an oath, that he had thought so. Well, said Mr. Dennis, mournfully, if you land enough to make a man mistrust his fellow creatures, I don't know what is. Desert the banners. Me, Ned Dennis, as was so christened by his own father. Is this axe yarn, brother? Yes, it's mine, said Hugh, in the same sullen manner as before. It might have hurt you if you had come in its way once or twice last night. Put it down. Might have hurt me. Said Mr. Dennis, still keeping it in his hand, and feeling the edge with an air of abstraction. Might have hurt me, and me exerting myself all the time to the worry best advantage. Here's a world, and you're not a-going to ask me to take a sup out of that ear bottle, eh? You passed it towards him. As he raised it to his lips, Barnaby jumped up, and motioning them to be silent, looked eagerly out. What's the matter, Barnaby? Said Dennis, glancing at Hugh and dropping the flask, but still holding the axe in his hand. Hush! He answered softly. What do I see glittering behind the hedge? What? Cried the hangman, raising his voice to its highest pitch, and laying hold of him and Hugh. Not soldiers, surely. That moment, the shed was filled with armed men, and a body of horse, galloping into the field, drew up before it. There. Said Dennis, who remained untouched among them when they had seized their prisoners. It's them two young ones, gentlemen, that the proclamation puts a price on. This other's an escaped felon. I'm sorry for it, brother, he added, in a tone of resignation, addressing himself to you, but you've brought it on yourself. You forced me to do it. You wouldn't respect the soundest constitutional principles, you know. You went and violated the worry framework of society. I had sooner have given away a trifle in charity than done this, I would upon my soul. If you'll keep fast hold on them, gentlemen, I think I can make a shift to tie them better than you can. But this operation was postponed for a few moments by a new occurrence. The blind man, whose ears were quicker than most people's sight, had been alarmed, before Barnaby, by a rustling in the bushes, under cover of which the soldiers had advanced. He retreated instantly, had hidden somewhere for a minute, and probably in his confusion mistaking the point at which he had emerged, was now seen running across the open meadow. An officer cried directly that he had helped to plunder a house last night. He was loudly called on to surrender. He ran the harder, and in a few seconds would have been out of gunshot. The word was given, and the men fired. There was a breathless pause and a profound silence, during which all eyes were fixed upon him. He had been seen to start at the discharge, as if the report had frightened him. But he neither stopped, nor slackened his pace in the least, and ran on full 40 yards further. Then, without one reel or stagger, or sign of faintness, or quivering of any limb, he dropped. Some of them hurried up to where he lay, the hangman with them. Everything had passed so quickly that the smoke had not yet scattered, but curled slowly off in a little cloud, which seemed like a dead man's spirit moving solemnly away. There were a few drops of blood upon the grass moor when they turned him over, that was all. "Look here. Look here," apostrophe said the hangman, stooping one knee beside the body, and gazing up with a disconsolate face at the officer and men. "Here's a pretty sight." Apostrophe, "stand out of the way," apostrophe replied the officer. "Sergeant, see what he had about him." Apostrophe, the man turned his pockets out upon the grass, and counted, beside some foreign coins and two rings, 5 and 40 guineas in gold. These were bundled up in a handkerchief and carried away. The body remained there for the present, but 6 men and the sergeant were left, to take it to the nearest public house. "Now then, if you're going," apostrophe said the sergeant, clapping Dennis on the back, and pointing after the officer who was walking towards the shed. To which Mr. Dennis only replied, "Don't talk to me." ... and then repeated what he had said before, namely, "Here's a pretty sight." ... "It's not one that you care for much, I should think," ... observed the sergeant coolly. "Why, who," ... said Mr. Dennis rising, "should care for it, if I don't?" ... "Oh, I didn't know you was so tender-hearted," ... said the sergeant. "That's all." ... "Tender-hearted." ... echoed Dennis. "Tender-hearted. Look at this man. Do you call this constitutional? Do you see him shot through and through instead of being worked off like a Briton? Damn, if I know which party to side with. You're as bad as the other. What's to become of the country if the military powers to go a superseding the civilians in this way? Where's this poor feller creature's rights as a citizen, that he didn't have me in his last moments? I was here. I was willing. I was ready. These are nice times, brother, to have the dead crying out against us in this way, and sleep comfortably in our beds arterwards. Worry nice." ... Whether he derived any material consolation from binding the prisoners is uncertain. Most probably he did. At all events, his being summoned to that work diverted him, for the time, from these painful reflections, and gave his thoughts a more congenial occupation. They were not all 3 carried off together, but in 2 parties, Barnaby and his father, going by one road in the center of a body of foot, and Hugh, fast bound upon a horse, and strongly guarded by a troop of cavalry, being taken by another. They had no opportunity for the least communication, in the short interval which preceded their departure, being kept strictly apart. Hugh only observed that Barnaby walked with a drooping head among his guard, and, without raising his eyes, that he tried to wave his fettered hand when he passed. For himself, he buoyed up his courage as he rode along, with the assurance that the mob would force his jail wherever it might be, and set him at liberty. But when they got into London, and more especially into Fleet Market, lately the stronghold of the rioters, where the military were rooting out the last remnant of the crowd, he saw that this hope was gone, and felt that he was riding to his death. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.